All of you here so bright and early. We're up to chapter 6 in Yeshayahu. I have problems with chapter 6 and I'm not even sure whether I'll be able to resolve them all now. There are problems that have always bothered me about chapter 6. Chapter 6, well, let's read the first pasuk and the first fascinating Rashi. Bishnat mot hamelech Uzziyahu. In the year of the death of King Uzziyahu, vo'ed'eh et Hashem yoshev al kisei rom v'nisa, and I saw Hashem, and he uses the name Adonai. He's using the name which denotes God as the master and lord of the earth. I saw him sitting on a chair, really a throne, Rom v'nisar, raised and uplifted, v'shulav mele'im et ha'echal. Shulav can mean one of a number of things, but basically the robes of royalty, the regal clothing, usually has a shulayim. The shulayim is a train. In other words, it's a long coat, and it may very well be that the servants of the king are the ones who carry the train as the he moves from one place to the next. So we're talking about a vision of regal majesty. Here is this raised and uplifted throne, and shulav. So now, one pshat shulav is that the robes, the raiments that are being worn by the great master fill the entire heichal, in other words, the throne room. Shulav mleim et heichal may very well be that the bottom of the chair, the bottom of the throne, fills the entire temple. And here is, for all intents and purposes, the first vision of Yeshayahu. Of all things, in most of our Svarim, if not all of them, the first Rashi on this pasuk is really not a Rashi. I'm going to read it and translate it, and in parentheses, it really appears in parentheses, and it's an Abarbanel, a Bishnat. Rashi Abarbanel says, Simon zeh tchilat ha-sefer, this chapter is the beginning of the book. U'tchilat nevuat Yeshayahu, and it's the beginning of the prophecy of Yeshayahu. And v'chamisho simonim, the five chapters. By the way, the moment I saw this, I knew it couldn't have been Rashi, because he's talking about chapter divisions. There were no chapter divisions in the days of Rashi. By the days of Abarbanel, there were. So he says, the first five chapters, HaKodmim, that are written before, Nemru Acharze, were really said after this. We will see in this chapter that this is the initiation of Yeshayahu into prophecy. This is his inaugural vision, which by right, of course, should be at the beginning of the Sefer. Most other Nevi'im, I believe that's exactly the way it is. The words of God appeared to Yirmiyahu, and we have a conversation between God and Yirmiyahu, where God tells him, "Beterem teitzei midechem higdashticho, before you came out of the womb, I had already prepared you to be a Navi. I want you to go to the Jewish people." Yirmiyahu says, "Lo yodati daber, I don't know how to speak kinar or nochi, because I'm young, I'm a child, I'm inexperienced." There's a whole give and take between Yirmiyahu and Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu also, the first vision that he has at the Sned, this is the beginning of his career as a Navi. Over here, the beginning of the career is in chapter 6, but chapter 6 is chapter 6, yes.
I just want to clarify something. What, the Nebuah, or the messages that he gave, were the first few five chapters.
Happened. But this happened after. No. They happened, the first five chapters, the prophecy he received there, chronologically came after chapter 6. That's the only problem. by right, chapter 6 is the beginning of the Sefer. Simon said, well, we're going to talk about that. This chapter is the beginning of the Sefer, and the beginning of his prophecy in the first 5 chapters, Nemru achar ze Simon, was said after this. Eloshein mugdamu mu'ucha batorah. There's no former and latter in Torah. Now, though I don't have an answer, not enough that I don't have an answer, I mean, it doesn't mean therefore I shouldn't express the question. If the Rabbeinu Shlomo who gave Torah has certain chapters out of chronological order, I can understand, because there is a very specific reason why wherever something is out of chronological order, there's reason for it. Over here, this was put together by the Beit Din of Chizkiyahu, later canonized by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolos. So why did they put chapter 6 at the end? At chapter 6. Yes? It just that it doesn't fit with the other prophets, where by all other prophets we find that the beginning of the Sefer is the beginning of his prophecy. I mean, that's the natural and normal thing. To say that God appeared to him, you know, leave that until chapter 6. Why not, in fact, present his credentials in advance? Why do we have to wait to chapter 6 until we are told who Yeshayahu is and that he has, in fact, been chosen? You present his credentials at the beginning of the Sefer, then you keep going. I don't have a good answer yet. V'raya l'davar, proof that the first 5 chapters really come after this, because it says in chapter 1, V'notra batzion, batzion is going to remain like a sukkah, like an abandoned hut. When did that happen? That didn't happen in the days of Uzziyahu. That happened much later, when Sancheriv, in the days of Chizkiyahu, there's going to be Uzziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Yechizkiyahu, 4 kings. 4 kings, and we're going to see it's going to be a period of close to 86 or 87 years that Yeshayahu says prophecy. Yeshayahu is going to be killed by the 5th king, Menashe, who is his grandson. But he says prophecy during the period of 4 kings, Uzziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Yechizkiyahu. Now, of course, you'll see in this chapter and the next chapter, I'm going to become serious about the homework that I gave you, that you should know the historical background. And that's going to become very serious. But let's go a little further here. So he says, what's described in the first chapter is something that certainly happened after the time of Uzziyahu. It happened toward the end of Yeshayahu's career as a prophet, in the days of Chizkiyahu, that Sion is going to remain completely isolated. That was after Sancheriv destroyed and sent into exile the 10 tribes. Only Yehuda and Yerushalayim remained. And that's the metaphor of the Notra Batzion. Batzion is going to remain like an abandoned hut, because all the 10 tribes are gone. 80% of Israel has gone off into exile. And what remains? All that remains is Yehuda and Binyamin with their city, Yerushalayim. Lekach Amar Chazon Yeshayahu. That's why at the beginning of the Sefer it says the vision of Yeshayahu, a Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. The beginning of the Sefer is the prophecy of Yeshayahu about Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, because that's all that remains at that moment in history. That means that moment is 4 generations down the line from chapter after chapter 6. Because of the days of Uzziyahu, there has been no invasion. There have been battles, but there has been no invasion. The 10 tribes are still in place. And then also it says in the first chapter, Amatuku O Tosifu Sora, that you keep being beaten time and time again. This is, of course, later. It's not the days of Uzziah. So the Abarbanel has said simply, "Ein mugdam u'mu'achar b'Torah." There has to be a reason why. Why is this chapter 6? Now, I don't want to make the question any better, because then you'll be waiting there. Well, so what's your answer? So I'm telling you, I've been working on this for a while, and I don't have anything yet that I feel... there's nothing that satisfies me. There's nothing that satisfies me. So therefore, I leave this open to you. If you can think of some good reason why chapter 6 is chapter 6. Yes. Do you have a good reason? Oh, that's a very good answer. That's a very good answer. I like that. Did you hear what she said? I dare say, I think what you're trying to tell us is that Yeshayahu's name does not appear in chapter 6. It's me. I. Who's me? Who's I? So then, of course, I could ask you, so why didn't the me or the I identify himself? It could have said, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amos. That puzzle could have been there. But I like what you're saying. It's an interesting thought. Okay. All right, let's go a little further. Bishnat Mot HaMelech Uzziyahu, in the year of the death of Uzziyahu, Rashi says one word on Bishnat Mot, the year of his death. Rashi says, Kishenitztara, when he became afflicted with leprosy. And here is an unusual chapter in Tanakh. This Uzziyahu committed, though he was a very... very pious king, he committed a terrible, terrible crime. And you have to know, huh? He wanted, it was not enough for him, the kingdom. He wanted to be able to bring Ketoret as well. And this was an act of, on his part, of great piety. And I'll just read a few of the psukim for you, because the story really appears not in Malachim. It appears in Divrei Hayamim. His father, by the way, was Amatziahu. There was a king Amatziahu. King Amatziahu had a brother. His brother's name was Amos. Alright? Yeshayahu ben Amos, therefore, is the nephew of King Amatziahu. Uzziyahu, who is the son of Amatziahu. So what are they? They're cousins. They're cousins. Uzziyahu, by the way, in Sefer Melachim, is called Azariahu. In Divrei Hayamim, he's called Uzziyahu. And here, in Yeshayahu, he's also called Uzziyahu. Okay. After the reign of Amatziahu, and by the way, Amatziahu was assassinated, and right there it was all a result of a king who at first had been pious and good, and then he turned from the ways of God. That was chapter 25 in Divrei Hayamim 2. Chapter 26 says, I'll just read a few psukim. Vayikhu kolam Yehudah Uzziyahu, all of the people of Yehudah took Uzziyahu, who ben sheshes reishana, he's 16 years old. Vayamlichu oto tachat aviv Amatziahu, they made him king in place of his father Amatziahu. Hu bona et Eilot. Eilat. He was a big builder of Eretz Yisrael. He was a big, big builder, and he began his career as a very, very pious king, this Uzziyahu. He built a lot by Yeshiveh Holy Yehuda, and he brought it back under the rule of Yehuda. Acharei Shechav HaMelech HaMavotav, after his father, the king, Amatziahu, had died. He was 16 years old. V'chamishim u'shtayim shono, 52 years he was king. 52 years. Very rare that a king ruled for 52 years. Unfortunately, I believe the king who ruled the longest was Menashe, who ruled for 55 years. But when it says about Uzziah that he ruled for 55 years, it was 52, it was not an entire 52, because in the middle of those 52 years, he commits the terrible sin that we're going to read about in a moment, and from that moment on, he becomes a Metzora, and he's a Metzora. There is a building right outside the walls of the old city that's the Bet HaChofshit, because a Metzora is supposed to be separated from the community living outside, so he was removed. We'll see how he was removed from the Bet HaMikdash, and he spent the last 25 years of his life in solitude or solitary confinement. And the fact is that his son Yotam was the consort or the king apparent, but it was never considered as part of the years of Yotam. So Rashi is saying, Bishnat Mot HaMelech Uzziyahu, it cannot be. We will make the Cheshbon, maybe not yet today, I'll write it out for you, but we can't make, the Cheshbon is going to be that if it's at the end, if it's really at the death of Uzziyahu, and there are some of our Shmuel, that then Yeshayahu said prophecy for some 60 years or so. But many Chazal and many of the Farshim say Bishnat Mot is when he became a Metzora, because Metzora, Choshev Kemet, the Metzora is considered like one who is dead. And therefore he begins to say prophecy Bishnat Mot HaMelech Uzziyahu. Why do they think it's the day that he was Metzora? Because the chapter here is going to talk about the walls shaking, because on the day that Uzziyahu went into the Bet HaMikdash to bring Ketoret, the earth shook at the moment that he did it. There was a burst of anger from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's going to be described over here just as the shaking of the very walls of the Bet HaMikdash. So it says, at first it says about Uzziyahu that he did Hayosho Ben Hashem, that which was good in the eyes of God. Kechol asher osa Amatziyahu, just like his father Amatziyahu. And as long as he was, there was a period of time during which he was close to God, and Ubiyimei Dor Shoet Hashem, when he sought out God, Hitzlicho Ha'elokim, God gave him success. He went out and waged war against Plishtim. He waged war and he was successful and victorious on the field of battle. And it says something about Uzziyahu that it does not say about any other king. Vayiven Migdolim Bamidbar, he built towers in the desert. Vayachzol Borot Rabim, and he dug many wells. Ki Mikner Rav Hoyolo, he had a lot of cattle. Uba Shvela Uba Mishor, and he had his cattle across the Shvela and the Mishor. Ikorim V'Kormim, he had farmers and tenders of vineyards. Behorim Uba Carmel, in the mountains, and then Carmel. Ki Ohev Adoma Hoya, he loved the land. Doesn't say that about anybody else. Ohev Adoma Hoya. I mean, it's quite obvious that the Navi is saying this in an extremely complimentary way. Ohev Adoma Hoya. And then it describes all of his strength and his greatness, and then comes the pasuk is a beautiful pasuk, and really long before Machiavelli said it, the Navi said it, Ukeches Kato, and the stronger that he got, Gova Libo, his heart became haughty, Adla Hashchid, until it became destructive. Power corrupts. Power corrupts. Ukeches Kato, I mean, it's very rare that Tanakh is going to give an assessment of the feelings behind an individual. Over here about Uzziyahu, it says, Ukechez kato, as he got stronger, Govalibo, his heart became conceited and haughty, Adla Hashchit, Vayimhal Ba'ashem Elokav, and he sinned against God his God, Vayovo El Heichal Hashem, and he came to the El Heichal Hashem. You see the same word that's going to be used here in this chapter, what we learn, v'shulav mileim et ha'heichal, and he came in to bring ketoret al mizbach ha'ketoret, to bring incense. Vayavo achrav al zaryahu ha'kohen, the Kohen Azariah came after him, and with him came the Kohanim, 80 valiant men, and they stood by Uzziah the king, and they told him, Lo lecho Uzziah lahaktir l'Hashem. This is not for you, Uzziah, to do, to bring Ketaret Hashem. I believe that it's very interesting that they don't refer to him as the king, because as he stands prepared to commit a terrible crime of this sort, then he in a sense is removing from himself the mantle of kingdom. He now sees himself as a Kohen. He doesn't see himself a king of Yehuda rules Taka by divine right. A rejection of God becomes really a rejection of the of his being king. It's the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, the holy ones, who are set aside to bring Ketoret. Say, min hamigdash, out, raus, out of the Bet HaMikdash, kima alta, because you have sinned. V'lo l'cho l'chavod me Hashem alikim, this is not going to be a source of honor for you. V'yizaf Uzziah was filled with wrath, u'biyado in his hand, he's holding Miktedet lahaktir, he's holding the pan with which to bring the incense. Ubizafo im hakohanim, and as he is angry with the kohanim at that moment, the leprosy began to shine on his forehead. Lifnei hakohanim deveit Hashem, me'alim is bach aktarit. He's standing on the mizbeach, and all of a sudden his face becomes. afflicted with leprosy. Vayifin elav Azaryo Kohen Arosh v'chol ha'anim. The Kohanim turned to him. V'hinei and behold, who mitzora b'mitzcho, he's a mitzora. Vayavhiluhu misham. They hustled him out of there. Where else does it say the word vayavhilu? If you want to have a sense of what the word vayavhilu. The second day for the second party that Haman is invited to Esther, and this is after he has taken Mordechai on a horse, on a royal horse, and he said, I forgot the pasuk. This is what the king shall do. This is what is done to the man whom the king wishes to honor. So now already Haman is in the process of falling. The officers of the king come in to hurry and hustle him to the party. Vayavhilu lahaviat Haman. Here bibehala, they get him out. To get him out of the Beit HaMikdash, and of all things, the Gamhu Nidchaf Latzeit. He's also pushing, he wants to get out of the Beit HaMikdash. In other words, here is his great moment, and he is struck down in such a vicious way, just at the moment, like not only is he not going to be a Kohen, not only is he not going to be a Melech, he's not even going to be a part of Klal Yisrael. Yes. That's very nice. In other words, he had his specialists right there on the spot. The Kohanim are the ones who. All right. The next pasuk. That's all we have to learn for the present. Uzziah was a mitzora. Ad Yom Moto, until the day of his death. Vayeshev v'Beit HaChofshit Mitzora, and he lived in the Beit HaChofshit, the house for the free and open outside. Kinigzami Beit Hashem, because he had been cut out of the house of God. V'yotam v'no'al Beit HaMelech Shofet at Am Haaretz. Interesting how it says this. His son Yotam is in charge of the house of the king, and he judges at Am Haaretz, a term that hasn't been used since Shoftim, because he does not assume the title of king, but for 25 years, 26 years, he's going to be the one who is going to rule the country. V'yeta divrei Uzziah, and the rest of the story of Uzziah, katav Yeshayahu ben Amoz Hanavi. All right. So here we're talking about a tragic day. At least we know now, and we'll see the proof in the chapter, that what Rashi says, Bishnat, in the year of his death of Uziyah, does not mean his death, but it means Kishche Nitztara, when he became Mitzora, and behold, he sees the vision of God sitting on this great throne, Vishulav Melayim Et HaHechel, and the train of his coat fills the Hechel. There are also those who say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting B'Bet HaMikdash Shel Mala, Bet HaMikdash up there, which corresponds to the Bet HaMikdash below. And in a sense, the train of his royal robes lead from the very heavens down over the Bet HaMikdash on earth. And Seraphim Omdim Mimalo, standing around him, are the Seraphim, the angels that are called Seraphim. Shesh Knafayim Le'echad, each one, six wings to each one. And Bishtayim Yechaseh Panav, with two wings he covers his face so that he should not see the vision of God himself. Ubishtayim Yechaseh Raglav, and with two he covers his feet. Ubishtayim Ya'ofeif, and with two he flies. They fly. Now it means like this, the first two are up here, the second two that the Pasuk are talking about are down by the legs. In the middle of his body he has two wings with which he flies. One other thing I want you to put in the back of your mind is that this chapter 6, and depending on what minhag one has, which I will also explain by Hemsheikh, this is the Haftorah for Parshat Yitro. So we might as well be thinking about it, why indeed did Chazal choose this chapter to be the Haftorah for Parshat Yitro? I mean, in a sense, of course, the most obvious thing of all is, in Parshat Yitro, God appears to the Jewish people for the first time at the foothills of Mount Sinai. In a sense, there are similarities between the vision that Yeshayahu sees and the vision that all of Israel will see. But that's only scratching the surface, mamish. There are deeper and more significant reasons why this is the Haftorah for Parshat Yitro. Chazal also tell us one other thing. He is going to see the vision that in a sense is called Maaseh Merkava, the chariot of God. The only other one we know that has seen anything of this sort is Yechezkel, the first two chapters. Huh? Who? No, Eliyahu goes to heaven in a chariot of fire, but there is no chapter or pasuk in Tanakh that says that he saw a vision of this sort. He is looking at God, the throne, and the Chazal said, of course, that Moshe, of course, saw, because Moshe says that I have seen. There was nobody else who saw God, Panim El Panim, spoke to him face to face as Moshe Rabbeinu did. Huh? Yeah, the Tachat, at the end of Parashat Mishpatim, it says, he sees the Tachat, beneath him there's Kemaisel Livnat HaSapir. Moshe sees, Yeshayahu sees, Yechezkel sees. The one who describes it in greatest detail of all things is Yechezkel. Two chapters where he describes all sorts of things. It's one of the chapters in Tanakh that you're not really allowed to learn with in any depth, because the truth is we don't understand, and even the understanding of that chapter has only been given over to few individuals. So Chazal say the reason why it is described in greater detail by Yechezkel than it is by Yeshayahu, because Yeshayahu is compared to the Ben Ir, the one who lives in the city and is close to the king. So he doesn't get all excited about all of the various minutiae or the details of the greatness of the king. But Yechezkel is a Ben Kfar. He's a little fellow from a small village, and he comes to the big city, and everything about the big city and everything surrounding the great king, every detail is so fascinating and so different and so beautiful to him that he must describe it in detail. The difference between Moshe and Yeshayahu is that Moshe, and this Chazal say in general, the difference between Moshe and all other prophets is that Moshe saw He saw everything with a clarity, with clarity. And all other prophets did not see bas baklarya hamira. There was always some kind of a cloud that was separated. All right. Ra saw Shifcha al Hayam, a maidservant at the Yam, saw when they pointed and they said, Ze Keli Vanveo, this is my God, and I shall exalt him. So there are two ways in which it's said in Chazal. One is that Shifcha, maidservant by the sea, saw more than Kol HaNeviim, all of the prophets. And then there's another that says, Ra'as HaShifcha Layam, HaShifcha by the Yam saw, Yoter Mimashe Ra'ah, Yecheskel Ben Buzi HaNavi, saw more than that which was seen by Yecheskel Ben Buzi. Okay, they're fine. The Korozel Zevi Omar. This, now we're going into something that is a basic part of our davening. This is Kedusha, and it's in the bracha of Yotzer Or. Basic part, what is it? Uvalitzion, Uvalitzion, the Korazel, Zevi Amar, and one calls to the other. In other words, the Seraphim, he hears and he sees the Seraphim praising God, but they do it in unison. Everybody together, one calls to the next, and then they say together, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot, Melo Chol Haaretz Kevodo, holy, holy, holy is the God of hosts. The entire earth is full of his honor. It is here that Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says, that which has become part of our davening, in Uvolitzion, Umekavlin Dain Min Dain, one receives from the other permission for Umrin, and they say, and Targum Yonatan explains that the three times Kadosh, each one describes another aspect and another dimension of God. Kadish Bishmei Meroma, Kadosh, he is holy in the very heavens. Bishmei Meroma Eloh, in the very exalted heavens. Beit Shchintei, that is the home of his divine presence. Kadish, the second holy, refers to the fact that God is holy. Al-Ara, upon the face of this earth, Ovad Givurte, which is the great work of his, the creation of the world. And then Kadish, the third one, refers to the eternity of God. Kadish la'olam li'olmei olmaya, he is holy forever and ever into eternity. So the first Kadosh represents God in heaven, Shamayim. The second Kadosh represents God upon the face of this earth. And the final, the third Kadosh represents the eternity of HaKadosh Baruch. Now we have Pasuk Dalet. Vayonu'u amot hasipim. The threshold of the building shook. Mikol ha kore, from the voice of the seraphim praising God, the habayit yimalei ashan, and the house became full of smoke. Now, what you have to keep in mind over here is imagine once a year, or really twice on one day, but on one day during the course of the year, the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies. What does he go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim for? He goes in order to bring the Ketoret. He brings the Ketoret in there, and then the entire room fills with smoke, and he leaves it there. He goes out later. He's going to go back to take the pan with the Ketoret out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What's happening means he has seen the vision. But then all of a sudden, he no longer is able to see God because the house becomes full of smoke. His vision is now blurred. Va'omar Yeshayahu, and as you correctly pointed out, if we wouldn't have the other chapters, we wouldn't know who this is. And he says, Va'omar, and I said, Oili ki nidmeti, woe unto me, ki nidmeti, either it means that I am to be destroyed, or I am to be silenced. Ki ish t'meis v'atayim anochi, because I'm a man whose lips are impure and unclean. Who betoch am t'meis v'atayim anochi yoshev, and I live amongst the people whose lips are unclean. Why am I going to be destroyed? Ki at hamelach Hashem tzakot ra'u einai, mine eyes have seen the King, the God of hosts. There's one thing that we learn from this pasuk, and that's the meaning of one word. One word that we said last week, we read a Rashi last week on chapter 5, a word that is used 26 times by Yeshayahu, the word oi. Now if you think that the word oi is stam akhechts, so here this pasuk tells us what the word oi means. When Yeshayahu says the word oi, he is talking about being shaken to the very core of his being. He is shaken by the fact that he has seen something that very few people have ever experienced. So when he's going to use the word oi to talk about oi magiei bayit bebayit, oi vei, what's going to happen to those who steal land and steal homes, oi woe is to those who drink and make merry and say, tomorrow we shall die. Oi woe is to the ones who say that good is bad, bad is good, bitter is sweet, sweet is bitter, light is darkness, darkness is light. You remember the passage from last week? When he says oi, oi represents the entire core of his being shakes. So don't for a moment think that the 26 times that Yeshayahu says oi, it's like, you know, I give shemama gitakrecht oi vei. It's not oi vei. Here is the description and the definition of what the word oi means. Most probably the most awesome experience that any human being can ever have, seeing the very presence and the majesty and glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That shakes him to the core. In the same way, Yeshayahu is shaken to the core by the sinfulness of men toward fellow men. What are you talking about? Do you know what Yeshayahu would have done with a report on poverty? Oi! That's what he would have done to a report on all those who are living below the poverty line. The Nevi'im spoke out against this, and he does it time and time again. I want to try and finish the text of the chapter. I'm sending a message, and I saw you got it even before you said it. One of the seraphim flew over to me, and in his hand was a burning coal. Bimel kokayim. He's holding it in melkachayim, that's a tongues. Lokach me al hamizbech. He took it from the mizbech. By the way, remember, there's also image over here of ketoret. Right? So the Ketoret, first of all, describes the awesome experience of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim when he brings the Azan. Second, of course, it's making reference, of course, to what Uzziyahu wanted to do on that day that brought the building to shake completely. Vayagalpi, he took the coal, and he touched it to my mouth, Vayoma, and he said, Hinei nogaz zeh al svotecha, behold, this has touched your lips, v'soravonecha, and your sin will be removed, v'chatoschot t'chupar, and your error, your mistake will be forgiven. Of course, one of the things that God becomes upset, and I want to read a line or two in Rashi. The Malach comes with a vitzpah. That's the word that it uses here for gachelet, a coal. There's one other place where this word is used, and that is by Eliyahu HaNavi, that he eats an ugat ritzafim, an ugat that was cooked, baked on coals. Did the two of them eat hot coals, or their lips are touched with hot coals? Rashi says, "Mipnei sha'amru dilaturia al Yisrael," because they said lashon hara about the Jewish people. You know what the Malach is doing, according to Rashi, according to Chazal? There are those who use Ajax, wash out a kid's mouth with soap, and over here by Yeshayahu, his mouth is going to be cleansed and purified as you would purify a pot, a keli that's treif. How do you purify it? With heat, right? Ligun. There's hagala in hot water, and then there's ligun when you back ice on oven. You understand? He has to be cleansed and purified. And the reason why he has to be cleansed and purified both he and Eliyahu, because they spoke ill of Klal Yisrael. If he says that Anochi Tmeis Vatayim, I am a person whose lips are unclean and impure, that's fine. B'vakashai. If you want to put yourself down, you can put yourself down, but you don't have a right to speak that way about Klal Yisrael. And he said, Am Tmeis Vatayim Anochi Yoshev, I live amongst the people who are Tmeis Vatayim. You don't have a right to say it. I thought somebody was talking to me. And who else spoke ill of Klal Yisrael? Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to the Rebbeim and says to him, listen, your people, Ovru et Britecha, they have transgressed your covenant. So the Rebbeim, poker face, says to Eliyahu, as Brisi, my covenant? Maybe at Britecha, your covenant. I know nothing of the sort. Kakadosh Baruch is upset with him that when he comes and he says, Klal Yisrael has broken your covenant. And by the way, that's why he is condemned. He is condemned to Dore Doros that he comes to every bris. That's why Eliyahu is Malach HaBris. Hine Shalcha Lefanecha. Take a look. And every day, Eliyahu HaNavi has to go back and he has to report to the Rebbe Shem HaShemes and tell me, Avru as Brisi, they have transgressed my commandment. Were you at more brisim today than Yasala was? Of course, and he'll tell him all the brisim that he was at. So because the two of them spoke ill of Klal Yisrael, therefore they have to be cleansed. Rashi says, Zekra'am, Yeshayahu referred to them as Am Tmei Sotayim, a people whose lips are unclean. Vze'omar, and Eliyahu said, Ki Ozu Britecha, they have transgressed, they have broken your covenant. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen to Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, La Malach HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Malach, listen to the term Ritzotz Peh. Ritzvah. Chazal say Ritzvah means Ritzotz. Break Peh, the mouth. Crush the mouth. She'oma Dilatoria Albani, that said Lashon Hara about my children. What a beautiful statement. One of the lesser great of the Shoftim was Gidon. Gidon, we don't know Gidon as having been any necessarily a great Talmud Chacham or a great scholar. When the Malach appears to Gidon, so the Malach, and it was Pesach time. So Gidon says to the Malach, I mean, where's this God that you're talking about? What are you telling me? He lets his people suffer like this. Where's this God that's supposed to have taken us out of its time? And he opens up the mouth at the Rabbeinu Shalalem. So the Malach says to him, or from the Pasuk, it's Mashmah that HaKadosh Baruch himself says, Lech b'kochach hazeh, go with this great strength of yours. And Chazal said, what's the great strength of Gidon? That you defended my people, you spoke up on behalf of my people. I don't mind if you attack me, but as long as you're speaking up on behalf of Klal Yisrael, one has to be very, very careful. Nishtred mashlech dvorot of Klal Yisrael. That's serious, serious, serious stuff.
That's serious.
Yeah, okay. Huh? Negative. That's an excellent, that's a precise translation. Negative. Deletoria. Oh, there's another Chazal that I remember. Chapter 7 of Yehoshua. Chapter 7 of Yehoshua is the defeat of the Jewish people at Ai. And when they come back from the battle of Ai, Yehoshua prostrates himself before God and he starts complaining, why did you take us across the Yarden? Now they're going to surround us and destroy us. We have demonstrated weakness, we're going to fall before our enemies. So God says, listen, they sinned. Who? Yahushua wants to know. So Hashem says, you expect me to speak Dilaturia Albanai? I'm going to say Lashon Hara. Tomorrow morning, let the Aron HaKodesh be out there and let Klal Yisrael pass before the Aron HaKadosh. Let the Aron say, I'm not going to say. The Rebbe Yisrael will not speak dilatoria negatively about his people. All right, let's go further. Va'eshma, and I heard at Kol Hashem Omer, again the name of Adon is used, not often used in Tanakh or in Yeshayahu, but over here we're talking about a vision at which where one sees the master of the whole world. And I heard Hashem say, "Et mi eshlach, whom shall I send? Who mi yelech lanu, and who is going to go?" V'omar, and I said, Yeshayahu understands that he is being shown this vision because the Rebbeinu Shel expects a positive answer from him. V'omar, and I said, Hinini, here I am, Shelacheni sent me. V'yomer, and he said, Leih v'omar tola amazeh, go and you should say to this people, Shimu shamoa v'al tavinu, you hear, but you don't understand. Uru ra'o, you see, v'al teido, and you don't know, you don't grasp. You know why? You can hear things, and you can see things, and you still don't understand. You just don't get it. You know why this is so? Because hashmein leiv ha'om hazeh, the heart of this people has become shamein, has become heavy, sated, v'oznov hachbeid, and his ears are heavy, v'einov hoshach, and his eyes he has turned away. A village then, pen yideh be'enav, because he's frightened, lest he see with his eyes, u'ba'aznav yishma, and with his ears he will hear, u'levavo yavin, and ultimately his heart will understand. He doesn't want to. And you know what will happen if he sees, you know what will happen? His heart will understand, v'shav, and he will do tshuva, v'rafalo, and it will be a healing to him. This is one of the psukim in Tanakh, and there are a number in Tehillim, where sin is compared to illness. And just like an illness, there has to be a refuah. The refuah for sin is tshuva. That brings the shav, he does tshuva, the rafalo, and it will be a healing. And the Rambam elaborates on this in his Shmona Prakim, where the Rambam this says, just as there is physical illness, so there is spiritual and emotional illness, and just like there are all sorts of medicines for the physically ill, there is a medicine for the spiritually ill, and therefore he uses the metaphor of chet. Chet equals choli, sin equals illness, and tshuva therefore equals refuah. Hasoleach, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Hasoleach lechol avonaychi, harofe lechol tachlu aychi. Maybe that I remember the pasuk. I think it's chapter 61 or 62 someplace in Tehillim, but don't check me out on it. V'omar, so now Yeshayahu responds to God, he says, Amosai, and for the third time, the Shem Hashem that is used is Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. How long will this situation continue? Vayomer, and he said, Ad Asher, Im Shou Orim Me'en Yoshev, until cities are going to be desolate with nobody living in them, Ubatim, and there are going to be many houses, Me'en Adam, without man in it, Voha. And the land is going to be desolate and destroyed. There is going to be a great deal of destruction here. There's going to be an exile that will come. That means that this is really the first prophecy that is given to Yeshayahu. We see Yeshayahu as the great prophet of Nechama, the prophet of consolation. Take a look at the first words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him. He tells him that there's going to be destruction, there's going to be galus. V'richak Hashem et ha'adam, God is going to distance men, v'rabo ha'zuva bekerev ha'aretz, and there will be a great situation of forsakenness, if there's a word like that, bekerev ha'aretz, huh? I can't hear. Yes. But he's really referring to the land being desolate and bereft and bereaved of its people. Berabah ha'azuva. That means even the few who will remain, but most of the land is going to be bereft of its people. For old Boasiria, here we are at the last pasuk in the chapter. It's a small chapter, but an extremely important one. The foundations of the prophecy of Yeshayahu come in this parak. For old Boasiria, what does it mean? There will be 10, or there will be a tenth. So here, let me read the pasuk. There will be an asiria. Vishava, Vaitala Va'er, and even after that, it will turn again, and there will be more consuming or destruction, Ka'ela V'cha alone, like the elm and the oak. Asher V'shalechet, you know what the Shalechet is? When the trees leave, when the leaves V'shalechet. But what happens after, at the time of Shalechet? So the leaves go, but you know what remains? The trunk of the tree remains. And the trunk of that tree that remains, and when you take a look at it during the winter, it looks as though there's no life left in it, but the potential for life is there, and it will someday blossom again. Asher b'shalechet, when it goes through the process of shalechet, matzevet bam. The trunk is there. Zera Kodesh Matzavta, its foundation, its pillar, is holy seed. And since its pillar is holy seed, that means you can be certain, despite all of the destruction you see, despite all of the absolute Azuvat Haaretz. I mean, this, by the way, is here is the Nechama. In this first prophecy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yeshayahu, regardless of what happens to the Jewish people, there will always be a remnant, and the remnant will always grow again and develop. The Radak says the following. The Radak says, during the winter, the trees leave, but you should know, ki b'yimei Nisan, in the days of Nisan, in spring, yoshuvu v'yifrichu ha'olim, the leaves are going to begin to blossom again, kein zera kodesh matzavtam, ki afal pi sheyiglu kulam, even though all of them are going to go into exile, lo tachshivu, don't for a moment think, ki yichlu b'galut, that they will be destroyed in the exile, v'lo yoshuvu la'aretzam, they will not return to their land, ki od yifrichu v'yitzmichu v'yoshuvu la'aretzam, they are going to blossom, and they're going to grow, and they're going to return to Eretz Yisrael. That's the Zera Kodesh Matzavta. There is a Sephurno. And this is the Sephurno. What I want to refer you to now is, remember, one of the things that I said that we have to think about while we are learning this perek is the fact that this perek is the Haftorah for Parshat Yitro. What's the great message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshat Yitro? That Klal Yisrael is Mamlechet Kohanim the Goy Kadosh. Mamlechet Kohanim V'goy Kadosh. What does Kadosh mean at the end of this chapter? Zera Kodesh Matzavta. So the Radak said that Kodesh represents the idea of the eternity of the Jewish people. Whatever you see happening at any particular moment in history, don't for a moment think that this is going to remain forever. There will always be a rejuvenation and a rebirth. The Sephurno in Parshat Yitro of the words Goy Kadosh, a holy people, so he says the following. Goy Kadosh, two words. Bilti Nifsadim, indestructible. Bilti Nifsadim. Kedusha, he defines Kedusha as a description of that aspect of the nature of the Jewish people. They have within their genes that they are Bilti Nifsadim. You know, if you translate it the wrong way, it can be Bilti Nifsadim, they're not losers. No. But no, Bilti Nifsadim means that they never disappear, they're never destroyed, eternity. By the way, what did Targum Yonatan say about Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh? The meaning of the third Kadosh is La'olam u'la'olmei omaya. In other words, the third Kadosh represents the idea that our Kadosh Baruch Hu is eternal, indestructible. What is true of our Kadosh Baruch Hu is true of Klal Yisrael, because Kutche Berichu O'raita v'Yisrael Chadhu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah and Yisrael are one. And what is it that unites the three? What's the Mechaneh HaMeshutaf, the common denominator? The common denominator is their eternity. The eternity of Klal Yisrael comes through Torah, which comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu infuses Torah with eternity, and therefore infuses the Jewish people who hold on to Torah with that sense of eternity. So the Sephirna was learning the word Kadosh as meaning something that is eternal. And he goes on to say, I'm reading, this is a Sephirna in Parshat Yitro. Abo Goy Kadosh means Bilti Nifsadim, those who will never be destroyed. Abo Tiyu Kayamim La'ad. Ba'ish, amongst men, they will exist forever. Kemoshe ye yeha inyan la'atid lavo, so it shall be in time to come, ka'amro. And he brings a pasuk that we learned earlier in chapter 4. An amazing pasuk. V'hoyo ha'nish'ar b'tzion, v'hanotar b'yushalayim, kadosh ye omer lo. The one who remains in Tzion, the remnant in Yerushalayim, will be called kadosh. So he says, you know what that pasuk means, that he will be called Kadosh? Indestructible. That's what you are. You keep coming back. You keep coming back. It's an extremely comforting idea when you feel sort of surrounded all around and portents of doom. Von Ruzal, Chacham said in Masechta Sanhedrin, they said the following, Ma Kadosh la'olam kayam, just like the one who is most Kadosh. What is one of the characteristics of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ma Kadosh la'olam kayam, he exists forever. Afhein, so too the Jewish people, la'olam kayamim. So the word Kodesh, and that's what the chapter ends with. Zera Kodesh matzavta. The beginning of the chapter tells us that Rebbeinu is Kadosh. The end of the chapter tells us that Klal Yisrael are Kadosh. Just as in Parshat Yitro, Klal Yisrael comes face to face with Kedushat Hashem, and the Rebbeinu says about them that you will be Mamlechet Kohanim v'goy Kadosh. Mamlechet Kohanim v'goy Kadosh. I wonder whether Uzziyahu may have made a mistake when he saw the words Mamlechet Kohanim, a kingdom of priests, that he thought that kings can also be priests. But cannot be. But if I find that in some medrash, Mamlechet Kohanim v'goy Kadosh. The Ramban describes Kedusha, gives it a different definition. The definition of Kadosh, according to the Ramban, is the following. To you, you will be Mamlechet Kohanim, the great Kadosh, you will be a kingdom of Mishartei Hashem, those who serve God, the great Kadosh, Ledovka Bakel, by clinging to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, as it says, Kedoshim Tihiyu Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem. V'hine Hivticham Ba'olam Hazeh U'Ba'olam Haba. By saying Kedoshim Tihiyu Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem, God, here also the idea of eternity, he has guaranteed them Olam Ha said that they will survive in Olam Hazeh and they will have Olam Haba, and that's ultimately eternity, both of them together. So the Haftorah now, according to Ashkenazim, by Ashkenazim I mean us, as distinct from our fellow Oriental brothers, who are Sfaradim, Sfaradim read only this chapter as the Haftorah of Yitro. The Ashkenazim read a few psukim, 6-7 psukim in chapter 7, so we'll try and read them quickly so that we can look at them as as one unit. And here again you have to know, all of a sudden we're making a real jump ahead in history. Vayihi, and it came to pass, Bimei Achaz ben Yotam ben Uzio. Achaz, you're going to have to know who Achaz is. Achaz is a Rasha. Yotam, by the way, is considered one of the greatest tzaddikim of Malchei Yehuda. Here is Yotam. Can you imagine what he's sandwiched between? He's sandwiched between Uzziyahu, his father Uzziyahu, who had been very good for about 25 years of his life, until Gova Libo Abla Hashchit, that he became so conceited until it became a destructive force within him. Yotam, who for many years is in place of the king, takes his father's place while his father is out in isolation. Yotam is a tzaddik. We see Yotam is a tzaddik. Following Yotam comes Achaz. I have this feeling that sort of children always want to rebel. If the father was a tzaddik, the best way to aggravate him is by being a rasha. And if the father was a rasha, there's no better way than to aggravate him than becoming a Baal Tshuva Haredi, you understand? The kishkis, you know, to take out of the kata. It seems for some strange reason to work that way. And by the way, the Meshech Chochma says this in one place, in his famous piece at the end of the Chukot, he says that's the sense of each generation. They want to be different. They want to be different than the generation before. They look at the generation before as being, you know, a bunch of old fogies, kishishim, you understand? What do they know about what life really is all about? It's this strange idea of the, you know, that they look at us already like us facing me, and if there are generations where children follow in the footsteps of their parents, those are blessed generations. In other words, everybody has to receive that which they got from the previous generation, and then find ways to make your own mark. This is always terribly important for children, to be able to separate, and then do their own thing. It's terribly important. So Achaz is a Rasha, and we're going to see the Rishus of Achaz as it appears in this chapter. And here already we're really going to need history, so I give you, have a week off next week. There are no classes next week. It's Hanukkah. So you'll have a chance to look at those chapters in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim. Anyway, what happened in the days of Achaz ben Yotam ben Ezra? Just a few psukim. Melech Yudah Olor Etzin Melech Aram Upekach ben Remaliyahu Melech Yisrael Yerushalayim Lamilchama Aleha. I have so much difficulty always understanding these things. But what happens over here is there is an alliance of Ritzin, king of Aram, together with Pekach ben Remaliyahu, who is the king of Yisrael, and the two of them join in order to wage war against Yehuda. I mean, it's unbelievable. Can you imagine Jews entering into alliances with the enemy against fellow Jews? I couldn't imagine anything of the sort like it. It staggers the imagination. I mean, a Jew should feel like he's Ben-Ami. You understand? What do you do with a Ben-Ami? What do you do with a Ben-Ami who's a Sarid and a Palid? I don't know. Anyway, below Yachol, of all things, the two of them come to wage war against Yehuda v'lo Yochel lehilachem ela, and they couldn't wage war. Vayugad l'beit David, in other words, they were unsuccessful in their campaign against Yehuda. Vayugad l'beit David le'mor, and it was told to the house of David, saying, Nocha Aram al Ephraim. Aram and Ephraim. Ephraim is another term by which Yisrael is referred to. Nocha Aram al Ephraim. Aram has camped together with Ephraim. Vayona levavo levavamo kinoa atzeya mipnei ruach. When they hear, in other words, they hear that the two camps have joined together and are coming against Yehuda, his heart trembled, and the heart of his people as atzeyar, as the trees of the forest tremble, quake, shake before the wind. By the way, we have the word lanua, we had it in chapter 6 as well. Vayonu'u amot hasipim, the very foundations of the building shook. I'm going to stop here.